Welcome, everybody, to All About Symbian. This is Insight Podcast number 223, and we're recording this on Wednesday, the 12th of September, 2012. It's been a couple of weeks, Rafe, since our last All About Symbian podcast. It's Mr. Rafe Blandford down in Sussex.
Hello, everybody.
Also with us, we have up in Hull, Mr. David Gilson.
Hello, everybody. It's good to be here, and welcome back to everyone who's listening.
And welcome back to Rafe, who's back in Blighty. I gather you've been on a jaunt across to New York. Can you summarise in 30 seconds what you saw?
Me in 30 seconds? I was there for the launch of the new Nokia Windows Phone 8 devices, the Lumia 920 and the 820. You can read all about them on our sister site, allaboutwindowsphone.com. But in many ways, these are kind of the next generation of the Windows Phone devices. And honestly, I think they're the ones that Symbian users should consider upgrading to. As you know, for those that consider the Lumia 800, 900 and 710 as not being quite there, because it does fill in a lot of the gaps. We still have a lot to learn about the software, but I think the hardware is pretty impressive. And I think we might come back and talk about the PureView element, at least of that, at the end of this podcast.
Maybe. A few items of news. Let's rattle through some of these with our various insights. Bell Refresh, which is an update, obviously, as it sounds, to Nokia Bell without taking it all the way to Feature Pack 1. It's basically for the older Symbian 3 generation phones like the Nokia N8 and E7 and C7 and E6 and so forth. Basically giving them a lot of the tweaks that are in Bell Feature Pack 1 without going all the way. It's rolling out for many devices as I speak. I got mine for the N8 and E7 about a week or so ago. I've still got some devices here which haven't had it yet. So if your Symbian 3 generation or Symbian Anna generation phone hasn't had Bell Refresh yet, then don't panic. It will probably arrive in the next few weeks. If not, go and nag Nokia Discussions and they'll sort it out for you. Included in Bell Refresh, new web browser, more clock widgets, a load of other widgets. Calendar gets an agenda view. You get various different sizes of music player widget. There's the weather now and weather forecast now officially in the OS. That's good. And you get the mobile data counter, which I find invaluable. You get the music player gets a facelift and also tabs for things like albums and artists are now split out. New version of Map Suite, if you go via the Nokia Suite, give the whole firmware refresh. A new version of Qt 4.8.0 now built in. Maybe Rafe can comment on that in a moment. And for the N8, you get things like Big Screen and DLNA Play also built in. So lots in there. There are also the usual bug fixes and performance optimizations, but that's a fairly major update. And just to label it as a refresh is almost like understating it, Rafe.
It is. I mean, what it's doing is sort of collecting together a whole load of updates, and some of which you could get by downloading and installing them independently. But it's always nice to get them in the kind of the official package, and it means you get better use of memory and things like that. You mentioned Qt there. I mean, that was more of a bug fix update than anything major. But some of the new widgets are very welcome. I was actually using the 701 while I was in New York, mainly because it's offline capabilities on Maps, but also it tends to be more frugal on data. And I had a kind of a pay-as-you-go SIM, which had a relatively stingy data limit on it. And so I was able to use the data counter widget to keep an eye on how much data I was using, make sure I could get it through each of the 24 hours. Because when you're out and about, that data can certainly disappear. So that's very useful. The map update in particular I think is worth having, because as I say, you can install it separately, but you get it all in one nice package. And yes, things like the DLNA pieces, which you'll only get on certain devices, they actually had a fairly substantial bit of functionality, because DLNA has been in Symbian for a long, long time, but hasn't always had an app to take advantage of it. And if you use that kind of technology at all, and it's built into things like the PlayStation, the Xbox, a lot of TVs as well now, it's a really easy way to kind of show off videos and pictures and even music from your phone on a TV screen or some other bit of DLNA-enabled equipment. And I've used it quite a bit to just do slideshows on the TV. I've taken some pictures and other people want to see. And I actually, for my money, it's the easiest way to do it. I mean, you don't have to plug in any cables or anything like that. So it's kind of nice to see that as part of this refresh update. But I guess it's sort of a reflection of where Symbian is now, that it's just being referred to as a refresh. And really, it's about a small number of application updates rather than lots of things in the core. This isn't major changes. It's actually, in one sense, about packaging all the various app updates together and making them available in one easy-to-install package. And one thing I will say, it is very easy to install this. In most cases, you'll be able to do it over the air. So, you know, it kind of feels like that update process has finally got to the point where it's relatively mature, and I was alerted to it on my phone, and, you know, was able to get it going straight away. So kind of a big thumbs up from me in that sense. And for me, at least, that was on the Nokia C7.
And to me, this on paper sounds great. I mean, as someone who looks out for all the productivity features, I love the sound of the calendar agenda view widget and the quick notes widget. I look forward to using them. Although, just to empathize with the listeners out there who are feeling rather left out because their phone hasn't had the update, mine hasn't either. So I'm still waiting. I mean, it's great to see all these things coming in. And I think in terms of user experience, the one thing I'd like to see Nokia doing now, although I think it's probably unlikely, is to do some work on the text input. Because with the narrow 16:9 ratio screen, it is a bit tricky to type in portrait. And I think just some extra correction algorithms that are maybe reminiscent of what competitors have these days would really help. But it's probably unlikely we're going to see that now, because we are in like maintenance mode rather than shiny new stuff mode.
Oh, you may say that, David, but I think you're going to get that in the next day or two. And shall I explain?
I think you
better had.
Because you have a Nokia 700 and Rafe has a 701. And both of those are Bell Feature Pack 1 devices. Feature Pack 2 is imminent. It appeared for a few product codes and then got pulled, as did a firmware update for the 808 along similar lines, and that got pulled very quickly. I think Nokia just testing the market, just seeing if they can get a few extra beta testers, perhaps. And essentially, one of the big improvements in Feature Pack 2 is you get multi-touch input on the keyboard, and you get a new keyboard layout, and you get better prediction. Apparently, it transforms the typing experience on Symbian. So I know your 700, David, has got quite a small screen, so maybe this will be quite sublingual to you, but certainly on things like the 701 and definitely on the 808, I think it'll really, really make the device much, much more friendly to use. Looking forward to getting this, Rafe?
I am definitely looking forward to getting this. I can probably reveal now that I have actually tried out this keyboard, and it's amazing to me it's taken this long to come to fruition. But it's good that it's finally going to arrive, and it certainly does make a difference to the typing experience. I'd agree with David. I have to admit, I've suffered a bit from switching between Windows Phone devices and the Symbian devices, and a lot of it is down to the narrower screen, but I also think the Windows Phone keyboard is probably one of the best available on any mobile platform, and the kind of the lack of multi-touch on Symbian was really telling there. The layout also, you know, does have an impact. I mean, I've always admired HTC devices, which, you know, take advantage of the kind of the staggered keyboard. And obviously that's similar to what you tend to get on desktop keyboards as well. I guess it goes back to sort of layouts of typewriters and things like that in some cases. And for a lot of people, it does seem to be easier to get fast and accurate text input when you're doing that. And if you think about the mechanics of how you're touching the screen, it does kind of make sense, because you're less likely to have a miss hit, or at least the phone can calculate more accurately what you're intending to hit. And so that update in Bell Feature Pack 2 is probably the one I'm most looking forward to getting my hands on.
Yeah, just looking down the change log for Bell Feature Pack 2 on the 808, which we did get a play with via our colleague Azriel Baker over in wherever he is, somewhere in the Far East.
Malaysia.
I think he used Navifirm actually to grab it directly off Nokia's servers, which is a tiny bit naughty perhaps, but it did pop up for some legitimate product codes in Europe, and then it got quickly pulled again. Just to run down the changelog, there's a really nice swipe to unlock shade effect for the lock screen. None of this just swiping a particular slider across the screen or tapping a button. Now that you can basically swipe the entire matte effect lock screen away, and it can comes up with full brightness. It's a really subtle effect. You have to see it really to understand what I'm talking about. You get the same widgets we just mentioned, the Bell refresh for the older generation Symbian devices. You get lighter color schemes by default. You get transparent toolbars throughout the UI, certainly giving it a much more modern feel, I think. The home screen toolbar now has a universal search on its bottom panel. Maybe they'll get sued by Apple, who knows. And most important, of course, to the Nokia 808, which had a very much stillborn gallery application that now works fully in landscape mode, and you can do multi-tap to select different photos. So I'm really looking forward to this on the 808. The combined advantages of Bell Feature Pack 2 plus the fixing the bits of the 808 that didn't work properly, I think really makes the 808 the ultimate Symbian device. And yes, I should be even more in love with mine when this finally hits.
We should probably say, Steve, that for those that remember the earlier kind of girls' name code names, Anna, Belle, Carla was sort of feature pack one and Donna is feature pack two. And so Belle feature pack two is the equivalent of the Donna update that some people have been anticipating for some time now. And I think it's probably fair to say this will be the last big Symbian update. There won't be anything else after this, aside from maybe the odd small bug fix in terms of firmware updates. So in some ways, it's kind of the last of an era, but it's good to see that this last update is actually going to be fairly substantial. I think people will probably notice this more than feature pack one, mainly because there's both visual and some under the hood changes. And as you say, you know, it's going to be well worthwhile having. I mean, it is sad in some senses that it's going to be restricted to the more recent devices, although there may be some kind of refresh update as there has been for Belle Feature Pack 1. We haven't seen any details on that, so I don't want to get anybody's hopes up. But as you say, things like the keyboard and obviously getting the full functionality back in Gallery in the 808 are really good. There is a new version of web, which once again kind of increases the HTML5 score. And so, you know, just makes the browser a little bit bigger. I think some of the things that people will like are there's some new widgets in here for email, for notes, and some other bits and pieces. There's also, you know, the Refresh Music Player, which, as I understand it, has artists and other tabs and kind of a new UI. It's not completely refreshed or anything, but just it brings it a little bit more up to date, which is good because the music UI has always felt like it's lagged behind where it could have been. You know, Nokia would good in the early years and never did very much to it, and as Steve was suggesting there, some of the transparency effects and kind of the, it's not so much animations as shadings, actually do give it quite a different visual feel, just maybe making it a bit more modern and moving it on from Belle, which, you know, to a certain extent had a relatively sort of conservative feel to it. Many people compared it to Android, and I think that's fair. I think this just adds a little bit more colour in one sense, you know, just a little bit of extra shine and polish. And we kind of discussed this in an earlier podcast, you know, Belle was released and then we had Belle Feature Pack 1, which fixed a lot of bugs and had a new bits and pieces. And this is kind of applying the final polish, if you will, to this Belle update, you know, the new UI that came in after Anna. And it sort of gave Symbian some really real extra life. And I'm sure a lot of people are going to look at this and go, isn't it a shame it didn't arrive a bit sooner? And you know, I think there's no avoiding that question. If it had arrived 18 months ago, Symbian might be in a very different position now. I think the, you know, long-term story wouldn't be any different, but I think people would look at Symbian in a slightly different light than they do now. So, you know, part of me goes, it's a shame it couldn't be delivered more quickly, but that's all part of the kind of the Nokia software engineering story that has resulted in so many changes in the last 2 years.
Yeah, well, one question people have been asking is how best should they update? I mean, these updates, they appear over the air, but then when you do the over the air update, which is typically between 10 and 40 megabytes tops, you don't always get all of the features mentioned in the changelog. And I've had to qualify some of these items with things in brackets saying only available via Nokia Suite. Just if you're listening to this, I would recommend that for a major OS update, and I think Feature Pack 1 to Feature Pack 2 counts as a major OS update, it's probably best, do all your backups, do all your syncs, make a note of any passwords you need to, do a hard reset, completely update the phone's firmware via Nokia Suite, i.e. relaying the whole of the official firmware in one go, and then build up from there. I mean, it takes a couple of hours of your life, but at the end of that, you know you've got everything that's in the firmware and that you're not just stuck with bits of the old OS, bits of the new OS, and things might start going wrong. I always like to have a complete version install and build things up, and everything feels fresher and cleaner, and you've got that peace of mind. I think that's worth having.
That's probably the best way to do it, but by contrast, I'm the lazy person who just wants to install the update, and I tend to just overlay things. And yes, I know some people have come across problems. I've never had anything major. So if you don't want to take 2 or 3 hours out to reset the device and start again, especially if you've got lots of apps installed and all that kind of thing, it is quite safe to, you know, install it from fresh. And that's always the intention with these over-the-air updates. But I suppose it is worth looking through the changelog. And if there's something you really wanted to use that's missing, maybe use Steve's method. But otherwise, you can use the lazy Rafe method and just say OK when it offers you an update.
I think I only actually have about, as I famously wrote an article about it, about 6, 7, 8 applications. So there's not a huge amount to install. I know some people out there, they're real app hogs, and they've got 50 different applications installed, and I can quite understand them not wanting to reinstall all 50. I have about 7 or 8 I really like. I keep the SIS files on my memory card, or if they're in the Nokia store, I just go in there and update or download from there. And it's a fairly painless experience, but I do understand that everyone's situation will be different here. But that's my recommendation anyway, hard reset, then full reinstall. So, and it's fun. That's fun bit of being a Symbian owner, is hacking into it and relaying a firmware and rebuilding and reinstalling. That's what we live for, isn't it?
Steve. No comment.
All right. The Nokia 808 is now cheaper. There was this whole hoo-ha about the white and the black one, and the black one was it 50 quid more than the white one? It's now the other way around. The black 808 on Amazon, which is Nokia's preferred partner in the UK, is now, I think it's £430-something pounds, and the white one's still up at the £480-something mark. So I think they've still got another £30-40 pounds to go. I think it'll stabilise sort of in 3 or 4 months' time around the £400 mark. But I think £430 pounds, David, that's a pretty good value for the 808 and what you get if you're a real Symbian fan and you want that great camera.
I think if you're an absolute diehard Symbian fan, you absolutely have to have it. Maybe, but me, well, the thing is, I look at that and it's a fantastic camera and a great phone, but it costs as much as my laptop, and I just can't reconcile that. So I would wait for a well cared for 808 on eBay, I'm afraid, and go for the second hand prices.
I don't know about you, Steve, but I'm not sure David's a sufficient fan to be on this podcast of Symbian. He clearly doesn't like it enough if he's not willing to make that kind of commitment. Although I do see where it's coming from. I mean, I'd actually say there's a wider point, the kind of the cost of the high-end smartphones in general. Because,
yes,
you know, obviously this applies to the iPhone, the Windows Phone devices, the high-end Android devices. You know, £500 is not an unusual price point for the top-tier devices. And if we're talking iPhone, it's more than that. And obviously, depending how you're buying it, the usual caveat about subsidies and contracts, you know, is a lot of money when, as David rightly points out, you can get what people see as maybe a bigger chunk of consumer electronics in the laptop or tablet form, you know, often for less money. I think, though, when you compare the 808 against other smartphones, it's a pretty competitive price, especially as it drops towards £400. And I think it may get a little bit lower than that as well in due course. And I think you also need to compare it against, you know, a camera that you might also be considering buying, because it does combine the two pretty effectively. And although I think it's over-generous to compare it to a DSLR, given, you know, the actual limitations on having, you know, one camera module rather than exchangeable lenses and all of that, I think it's fair enough to compare it to a higher-end point-and-shoot camera if you're avoiding the super zoom category, that is. You know, and often you'll be paying £200, £250 there. So if you look upon it as that, plus you're also getting a decent smartphone for £150, I think it then becomes a much more palatable purchase for many. And if you're, you know, you like your Symbian phone and you are looking for an upgrade, it's still without a doubt the ultimate Symbian phone that you can buy. And having been carrying one around a little bit, I took it with me and was doing a lot of images on it last week. I'd say, you know, it's not as big as it sometimes, you know, is heralded to be. And certainly it was sitting perfectly comfortably in my pocket. And it's interesting, I actually found the thickness of it not a problem at all. The issue I actually had when carrying phones around was kind of the profile, the width of the devices, which with some of the bigger Android devices, I'm thinking, you know, the 4.5-inch screens and above, and actually even something like the Lumia 900, also the One X, I guess, would fall into this category. I find those more of a problem to carry around in the pocket than the kind of the Fatboy 808. It's made no mistake, you know, the 808 is a pretty heavy device and it is quite thick, but that's kind of what you get from having that camera module on it.
I think this might actually be a good time just to depart from the show notes a little bit and just talk about what you were doing in New York, Riff, which was looking at the new Nokia Windows phones, because the Lumia 920 had a PureView camera as well, but it wasn't a humongous high-resolution oversampling sensor as the 808 PureView is. Instead, it's something else that Nokia are branding as PureView, which is a completely optically stabilized camera module inside. So I think let's hand over to Steve. Steve's the camera expert. So do you want to tell us more about this?
Ironically, the Lumia 920 is just as heavy as the 808, if I remember the specs roughly right.
That's right.
So the comments about bulk and heaviness.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's a weight I never noticed on my smartphones, but quite a few people are talking about it. And I have to admit, once you get past a certain point, it's not really a big issue for me, but I appreciate for some people it is. So yes, I think at 180 odd grams, you know, it is a pretty heavy device. I think probably it's our female listeners are probably more susceptible to this kind of thing. If you keep a phone in your pocket, if you keep it in your handbag, you probably won't mind. And the male listeners are probably going, I'm rock hard, I can carry a phone of any weight.
In answer to David's question about the PureView, PureView Phase 2, as Nokia call it, essentially involves going down a different route to get better pictures, which is to use optical image stabilization, where the entire camera module is kind of mounted on electromechanical springs, and are using some sort of active system with a closed loop electronics. As the gyro in the phone detects you wobbling the phone or perhaps jerking it as you try and take the photo, it compensates by applying the appropriate stimulus to the springs, which then jolts the camera module up or down or left or right in the appropriate way so that the camera stays rock steady in terms of 3D space. So you should get very much clearer photographs when you've got a vibration on the go, taking a photograph while you're moving, or perhaps with just very wobbly hands and so forth, or perhaps we're using long shutter times in low light conditions. So it's an interesting approach. I can't wait to play with it. It's very much complementary, though, to the PureView Phase 1 they used on the 808 PureView. Well, I guess the obvious question and thing to consider is that given the zooming available on the 808 PureView, of course, once you're zoomed in, everything kind of wobbles more on the viewfinder. So the thing you're crying out for is some kind of optical image stabilization. So I really can see a point where Nokia meld these two technologies together into the ultimate PureView camera phone. I doubt if it will run Symbian, but it may just run Windows Phone next year.
And regular listeners of this podcast will know the name Damien Dinning, who's Nokia's camera guru. If you go to his Twitter page, which is twitter.com/phonedaz, he recently tweeted a series of tweets which was outlining the different circumstances in which the PureView 808 or the Lumia 920 would be better, and it was a really interesting insight into the relative pros and cons of each approach.
Yeah, and just to reiterate what Steve said, I mean, they are very different approaches, but this kind of underlines what Nokia said about PureView when they announced the 808, that it's not about any one specific device or indeed one specific technology. It's about combining things together to create the best possible cameras. And it's worth explaining that the sensor on the 920 obviously is nowhere near the size of that on the 808, but it does have some extra technology in it. It's backlit, and that's similar to what you get in some of the HTC phones, also the iPhone. And so in terms of sensor size, it probably outperforms some comparatively non-backlit stuff, but it isn't by any means up to the 808. But having tried out this camera while I was in New York, I was pretty impressed, and particularly in low light conditions. But actually, any time you have a take a camera phone picture and you see that there's a bit of blur or shake in it, it'll improve. And certainly I've noticed that using the 808 into the handheld mode, sometimes it can be quite hard to get a sharp picture and avoiding camera phone shake. And this is what this technology will do. So in one sense, I would say, if I was trying to keep it simple, the 808 is the equivalent of the DSLR, i.e. for professionals who know how to get the best out of it, maybe are going to put it on a tripod, really know what they're doing with the camera technology. Whereas this 920, it's more like a point and shoot camera for everybody. So I think in many ways, people will get more out of the 920 because it's even more forgiving than the 808 is when taking pictures. It's quite hard to take a bad picture with the 920. So in some ways, it feels like the more mainstream technology. I mean, it's a shame to give up the zoom and things like that. And, I would obviously hope one day we might see these two combined together. But, people who are sitting there going, it's not really PureView. Well, no, it's not 808 PureView, but in some ways, it's just as impressive, if not more so. I mean, I almost would be prepared to say I think more people will benefit from the technology used, this optical image stabilization. Should make it clear that there's a hardware component to this, but there's also a very complex bit of software algorithms going on, because you can imagine with it doing this kind of thing and having letting more light in for a longer amount of time, actually what it's having to do in the background with the calculations is quite different to some of the traditional camera phones. You know, so it's, you know, impressive stuff. So there's the same three elements as there were before in PureView. You know, it's about the optics, it's about the kind of the hardware bit of the camera, the sensor size, but it's also about those software algorithms.
One thing that I found fascinating, Rafe, that you were saying there, that the PureView Phase 2, as used on the Lumia 920, will give better photos for the everyday user. And I think I do agree with that. It's kind of, if you, the modern equivalent, the 2012 equivalent of EDOF, if you like. I consider EDOF almost to be PureView Phase 0. It was, Nokia had all these different imaging technologies and ideas that went through their labs over the last 3 or 4 years. EDOF was the first to come to fruition, and it had its own compromises, not being able to take close-up shots was the biggest one, of course. And then you've got the 808, you've got the N8 to one side, maybe the 8's more of a really, really good traditional camera, and now you've got this 920. What the question everyone's asking was asking me, of course, in the days after the 920 announcement was, which is the best camera, Steve, Nokia 808 or 920? Of course, the 808 is ultimately the best camera, and someone who knows what they're doing can take far, far better photographs in every light condition than the 920. But again, you come back to this, I don't know, maybe it's a 90-10 rule, that 90% of people may well be able to take better photographs much of the time with the 920 because it's optimized for them rather than the people, you know, who like all singing, all dancing camera phones like me.
That's absolutely right, which is why I was kind of drawing that professional versus, you know, I wouldn't say amateur, it's still pro users, but, you know, most people will get on better with a point-and-shoot camera. And, you know, there are obviously compromises in having something like the 808 technology in terms of the size of everything like that. You know, I actually saw, you know, the demo shots, had a chance to take a few myself. And as people will probably know, there has been some controversy around Nokia faking some sample video. I was actually in the press conference. I didn't really see it as faking video myself, but I think it depends on how you view that kind of thing. Undoubtedly, it probably would have been beneficial if it had been labeled properly, particularly when they were using it on the conversations blog. But maybe we'll talk that more about that in the Windows Phone podcast. But it's certainly impressive technology. And, you know, there are a lot of people going to be going, is it a good replacement for my N8? Obviously, we have to wait till we get hardware ourselves and can test it. But of the Windows Phone devices, this is easily the one that gets closest to the N8. And I think the camera is, you know, going to be very broadly equivalent to, but better in many situations. And there's all the other bits and pieces, some of which we're still learning about. Windows Phone 8 is going to make this a very viable upgrade for those who, you know, like the N8 and who've been waiting a bit because they wanted something more than the Lumia 800.
One word for you though, Rafe, one word, sorry to interrupt, but Xenon. Has yes. The Lumia 920 got Xenon? No. And that one very reason that most people shots indoors, optical stabilization be damned, they may well need that Xenon flash because that's I depend on it.
Well, honestly, that was my first reaction as well. And, you know, I then got the usual comment on LEDs being, you know, stronger in this generation. And yes, they are. But actually, I don't think there's going to be nearly so much of a need for a Xenon flash with this technology because of this optical image stabilization and the aperture being down f2.0. You can actually leave it open longer, which means it's able to gather more lighting. And there were some really remarkable example shots. And actually, in the demo hall, they had an area which was kind of a room with basically no lighting in it, which you could just, there was a brick missing and you could put your phone in it and take a shot into it. And there were a vase of flowers. And I actually did a side-by-side with an 808 and the 920. And it was quite amazing how much better the 920 was. And so I actually think it's not going to need Xenon flash nearly as much as something like the 808 and some other camera phones are, because it's so much better in low light conditions. Now, of course, if you're in the pitch black, that doesn't apply. But the conditions you're talking about down the pub or inside, I think much of the time it's going to be able to cope pretty well. Again, we're going to have to wait for this final assessment. But I actually think people might not notice the absence of the Xenon flash as much as they're thinking they will. But as I say, we'll be testing all of this. And one of the things we do want to obviously talk about when we review this device is it a worthy upgrade for the Symbian owner, whether you're coming from the N8 or some other device. But what I will say is I was really impressed as this is the next generation of Nokia camera technology, and they continue to impress. And in some ways, the most impressive thing about this was this optical image stabilization. It is available on, you know, other cameras, on pro DSLRs and some of the point and shoots. But the thing is, they tend to just have stabilization of one element of the lens. This is taking the whole kind of optical assembly and stabilizing that bit of it. And as a result, it's actually almost outperforming those professional cameras, it's about 50% faster if you, you know, take the Nokia figures as they were given. And it's actually one of the very rare occasions where the small size of a camera phone module actually counts in its favor. And so I was kind of impressed that Nokia was looking at, you know, the kind of unbreakable characteristics of these camera phone modules, which do have to be very small, and actually using them to their advantage. Yeah. And in some senses, that was the most impressive thing about the conceptual leap required to implement this technology. And I have no doubt we'll see it in many other devices. Sadly, not on a Symbian device, but I think there'll be lots of people out there who will be pleased to see Nokia continuing to break new ground on camera phones.
Yeah. Well, I've just had the notification that DHL are rushing me my own Lumia 920, so I can do that test. Well, in my dreams, anyway. You should add, just for people who are in the Symbian world and may not be up to speed with Windows Phone, Windows Phone 8 is actually another month and a half at least away. So even though the hardware may well be ready, we'll be testing any of these devices we're talking about in comparison to Symbian phones anytime soon. We're looking at, I don't know, November, or it may be even December. So, but do watch this space. We must move on, though, guys. We're not going to get through our full list of show list topics. Microsoft Apps Suite, which I know I was a bit sniffy about it in the early days of being released on Symbian. It was rather hot, stillborn again. But it has improved in recent builds, and mainly because it includes improvements to the email system, especially Mail for Exchange. And the NAE7, C7, all that generation of devices, which had previously had Microsoft App Suite 2.0, they've now got version 2.01, which doesn't sound like much, but it does have much more intelligent use of the system disk, the CDisk. So if you're struggling for CDisk space, then it will give you more back. And of course, it contains the very latest tweaks and updates. And I don't know about you, Rafe, but in addition to just giving a minor facelift to the email application, I've certainly found Mail for Exchange and email generally has been faster, smoother, and easier.
Yeah, it's always a bit difficult to judge these things because I installed this as well as a matter of course. And yes, the performance does seem a lot better, whether that's, you know, an underlying update or something else that I've done. It's got to the point now where I would say it's a pretty mature implementation of Mail for Exchange. And, you know, certainly comparing it to the other platforms, the speed at which the email arrives and then displays is, you know, on a par with anything else I use. The one thing that kind of stopped me using it as kind of the mainstream email device is I'm just a bit quicker when I'm using the keyboard on Windows Phone to reply to emails. But we may well see that change, as we mentioned earlier in this podcast, with Bell Feature Pack 2.
Yeah. And of course, you also get OneNote Office Link and PowerPoint Broadcast. David, you've commented on quite a few of these Microsoft App Suite stories. How do you rate things like OneNote and Office now? Are they fast enough on Symbian for real-time, real-world use?
When I used the Office Suite on the N8, I was happy with OneNote. That worked very well. Functionality with the Office Suites for editing Word documents, etc., was not quite on a par with what I'm used to, say, on Windows Phone or third-party Office Suites on Android. So I think you still need quick Office if you want to do, like, real road warrior duty.
Yeah, I agree absolutely there. I mean, I really look on them as file viewers and very, very basic editing if you're just, you know, adjusting a bit of the text or something like that, which in all fairness is going to be what you tend to do on, you know, smartphone devices, especially with the kind of limited screen size. I think given the availability of tablets now, a lot of road warriors who want to do that kind of editing on the go are probably picking up that kind of device. And yes, in terms of Symbian, QuickOffice is still superior for the editing functionality. I've always been a bit frustrated by the limitation on smartphones, full stop. It's not just about Symbian, but it's probably fair to say the options are better elsewhere. The performance is also pretty disappointing on the kind of the original Symbian 3 devices when you're opening up the bigger Word, Excel, etc. files. It is much better on the more recent devices, perhaps not surprisingly given the memory availability and the processor speeds. But even there can be some delays. But I've actually found that, you know, across pretty much all mobile devices, it's never quite the same as using it on the desktop where you can pretty much expect things to be instant. So I will confess I don't do an awful lot of on-the-go document editing as a result.
Okay, just a note that QuickOffice, people have been commenting in our various stories, is actually QuickOffice is quite slow when you're loading a very long document. You can get very slow, so you scroll to the end of the document, you try inserting some characters, and it can be 2 or 3 seconds between characters appearing, which is obviously not ideal. But I just wanted to give a shout out to something that David, I know, reviewed a while back, which is Smart Office, a complete office suite replacement for Quick Office. And each suite obviously has its own pros and cons. But Smart Office, in addition to having better performance, I think, for longer documents, also had Google Drive / Google Docs integration, which I think is a major selling point. So if you're unhappy with Microsoft Office, if you're unhappy with Quick Office, there's Smart Office as well.
Yeah, it's actually Smart Office and the very latest paid upgrade of Quick Office do both have cloud integration, so you can pull down and upload files to Dropbox as well. And I think Quick Office supports SkyDrive as well now, but I'm not 100% sure about that. The problem I have with using, I used to swear by Google Docs as it was, but the problem I have with it is that the rest of the world is using Microsoft Office files. And yes, you can synchronize Microsoft Office files up to Google Drive now, but if you actually want to edit them in Google's own tools on the desktop website, for example, you have to create a separate copy in Google's own format. And that is really killing the usefulness of Google Drive for me in terms of cloud editing. And it's why I'm more reluctantly preferring to use SkyDrive.
Yeah, I'd agree. I mean, we used to talk about round-tripping documents between a smartphone and a PC, and the cloud has obviously added an extra element to that round-tripping, and I'm afraid that's where Google Docs really falls down, which is surprising because it's maybe where you'd expect Google to be strongest. And like David, I've been tending to use SkyDrive. I mean, partly, to be fair, that's the integration with Windows Phone as well, but I've been trying out some of the third-party utilities that enable you to access it on Symbian, including, you know, the workarounds, doing it through web dev and things like that. But yeah, you know, having everything just work seamlessly and being able to drop into SkyDrive on any computer and then fire up the web version of Word or Excel or whatever it happens to be, it just tends to work better. And of course, you know, those documents do tend to be the ones you're sharing with other people. And, you know, de facto, you know, Office is still the standard. And I don't see that changing anytime soon.
Yeah, so it's good to have these versions of Microsoft Office available anyway for Symbian version 2.01. Do go and look for it in SW update on your Symbian 3/Anna/Bell phone, and it should install fairly smoothly. Do note it takes a while to install, and we were looking about time to make a cup of tea, I think, and come back to your desk.
At so don't least expect one
instantly. one final update before we finish on this podcast. Opera Mini 7 has now got update 2. Now, I know a lot of people out there in Symbian land are big Opera Mini fans. When the going gets tough and you're stuck in a GPRS somewhere out in the middle of nowhere, Opera Mini is quite often the only browser that will actually do the business in terms of rendering pages and getting you the content you need. If you go to m.opera.com, you can get the very latest version. Forget the version in the Nokia store. That tends to lag a few weeks behind. So m.opera.com in web on your Symbian smartphone. Grab the latest version. The update two has got improved progress bar behavior when loading big pages, improved font support and text drawing, fixes and improvements at the network level, and other stability and bug fixes. So nothing dramatic, but certainly it's been working very smoothly for me the last couple of days when I've been trying it out. So highly, highly recommended. I think we're out of time, guys. We'll leave some discussion topics for the next podcast, just in case there's no news. In the meantime, it's any last words from Rafe Blanford?
No, I think it's a good time to draw it to a close. And it's always good to leave something more to talk about next time. But I hope you've enjoyed listening to this podcast. Feedback, as ever, appreciated. Rafe at allaboutsymbian.com. You can also follow along on our Twitter account at AAS and on Facebook at facebook.com/allaboutsymbian. And of course, don't forget to visit the website as well, allaboutsymbian.com.
I think they do that anyway, right?
I hope so, yeah.
Any last words from David?
I just say, if you always read our stories but you've never left a comment, don't be afraid, don't be a stranger. Just come and have a go. Yep. Yeah, and we're all friendly.
Mostly.
There's nothing so disheartening for a writer. You pour your heart and soul into a 1,000-word epic, and then you get zero comments after 3 days. You think, what on earth was that for? And the answer, of course, is to get brownie points from Rafe, but that's another story for another day. let's leave it there. Thank you very much for listening. This has been All About Symbian Insight Podcast. See you next time.